The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Everybody, welcome to the Roto-World Football Show. It's Thursday, February 22nd. I am Patrick Daugherty, joined by Mr. Denny Carter and Kyle Dvorchik, where you may not think we have anything to talk about, but the joke's on you, because we do. We're going to ask Kyle about some of the early rookie receiver scene and best quote best ball. We're going to talk about maybe a potential Shanny system bounce for Alvin Kamara. What about Kenneth Walker versus Zach Charbonnet next season in an offense that apparently wants to be fully established under new coach Mike McDonald. We learned about the Falcons talking up Kyle Pitts' blocking, even though, as Denny points out, not a good blocker at all.
He's the worst, actually.
This is not a good blocker whatsoever. Then we're going to get into one of Kyle's recent articles on potential cut candidates ahead of the start of free agency. Some big names in there. But Kyle, first, I was told you wanted to join in on the yelling about a certain big name, Derrick Henry, that Denny and I got a little shouty on Tuesday, where I was saying,
well, to be clear, I listened to it. One of you got shouty, and the other one was Denny.
I was not even fired up.
Yeah, Denny doesn't shout much. Kyle and I will shout occasionally. And in case you did not hear Tuesday's show, I think the Ravens are one of the rare teams to camp Moneyball or RB. They need to actually spend at running back. That it was an embarrassment and a fiasco how shorthanded they got caught in their backfield. That everyone's like, oh, is this the play calling that was bad against the Chiefs? Well, guess why they didn't call the run? Because they ain't beating the Kansas City Chiefs with Justice Hill and Gus Edwards. Did you ever think about that? Did you ever even consider that for 1 second? You didn't, did you? No, but Kyle, what do you want to say about this?
No, I mean, I was going to say Denny covered it, but actually Denny didn't cover much. He was like, I don't agree, and then you yelled at him for a long time. And then he goes, sure.
I did sort of give up. You're right.
Well, the yelling convinced him. He came around. He was tweeting about it afterwards.
That's certainly one way to put it.
The yelling convinced him.
I feel like if your team is a team in which, like, we need to have a highly paid running back for the offense to work, that is a grave indictment of the quarterback. Like, you were saying the quarterback is not enough to get it done. And he had a bad game. Like, he had a bad game and the play calling was bad and the team made some mistakes that weren't his fault that also kind of looked like his mistakes. Like, he got strip sacked on a play where, like, maybe if he was hyper aware of the pass rush, he could have gotten there. But, like, I don't blame him for the strip sack he took. He had some missed deep throws. Also had I think in the EPA stats, the Zay Flowers fumble also goes down as a negative passing play because it was a passing play with a negative result.
That probably had more negative EPA than any play all year.
Yeah. Like negative 100. Yeah.
So his stats were bad. Maybe he didn't play as bad as the stats. But like PFF, who's grading, I mean, they're like film grading essentially, also charted it as his worst game as a passer of the entire year. 100%. He bricked out in a big spot, despite having a good game before that and a great MVP worthy season. But like, I think we talked about this a week ago where we're like, we probably overanalyzed the Super Bowl to death. Once we killed the Super Bowl to death with our analyzing
backwards, yeah.
Just keep going 1 week backwards. At some point, dude, I can't wait to get to the Broncos game week three or whatever, Miami. That's going to be fun. We overanalyzed that one to death. So
I don't think it's necessarily an indictment of Lamar. So what I think it is, this offense is built around the special running abilities of Lamar Jackson. As such, then the passing game always just feels a little underdeveloped. Part of it is that their receiver flyers keep not working, like what happened with the Patriots. But if the plan is to build this offense around this special trait, which is Lamar Jackson's legs, it's obviously going to be a run-based offense. And I just think it's crazy to have a run-based offense where it's all on Lamar and you don't have like a plan. Like, so people are going to talk about the play calling. I really think it was because they just knew Justice Hill and Gus Edwards couldn't get the job done. And I think they need someone else who can generate their own yards on the ground. And someone on Twitter, because of course I've been debating this on Twitter too, made the point where I think maybe the best way I could sum it up is that really it's kind of like the 49ers, where obviously the 49ers could have had a lot of success with Eli Mitchell. Or you could try to like amplify, this is their exact word, amplify the edge your scheme has with the running game. Like one of the special things about your offense is how amazing the running game is. And don't just put a replacement level guy in there like Eli Mitchell. Put someone in there like Christian McCaffrey, who puts it like all the way over the top and makes it truly special. And I just do think the Ravens really are in that situation, and that it was just like crying out, because they weren't going to have passing success against the Chiefs, but there was only one guy who could make special plays on the ground that day, Lamar. Lamar should have run more, by the way, not the running backs.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that, too. That's almost like a bigger indictment of we didn't dial up run plays. Like, I think they probably should have ran the ball more, and they ran, like Gus Edwards averaged like 4 or 5 yards a carry. He had a fine game, as in the 3 carries they gave him, right? I think, honestly, the worst part was their lack of usage as Lamar as a runner. I get that over the whole course of a season, you do not want him going 10 carries in a game. But just like Mahomes dials up his rushing and the team dials up their offense in the playoffs, they could have done that as well. Like Lamar, like, we're putting this even on your legs as well. We're putting that on your back for this game. We don't do that in the whole season, but it's time to step things up. But I think like it, in the confines of we're going to be a balanced offense, sure. But like, I feel like upgrade at running back is treating a symptom of the disease and not the disease. The disease is you have a 2-time MVP quarterback and you refuse to go past 0% pass rate over expected. When we watched him absolutely crush efficiency numbers this year, and then he's done it.
But he crushes efficiency numbers though because of the fear of his legs. It still all comes back to his legs. And they weren't scared of his legs that day because they had shut down two of the other three elements of the offense, the passing attack and the backfield. So, like, whatever, he's not going to single-handedly beat us with his legs. And he didn't even try. That was bad.
Yeah, but I feel like if you just admit that Lamar can't beat the Chiefs through the air, he's not a franchise quarterback. And I don't think that's true.
Well, who can beat almost no one could beat this Chiefs defense through the air. I don't even really think it's that big of an indictment of Lamar. I mean, Josh Allen couldn't beat the Chiefs through the air. Mr. EPA himself, Brock Purdy, not saying he looked like a plumber in the Super Bowl, but he didn't look like the EPA champ. I'll say that.
He looked like he knew how to fix a sink.
He does. So we have someone in the comments right now on Twitch. This is not like a live question show or anything, but it makes a point too. If you're going to be a running team in a passing league, you got to be the best running team. And the 49ers leaned into that. I just think it was a missed opportunity for the Ravens not to lean into that more. Like, it was a strength that needed to be accentuated and not just like money-balled. I thought this all – as you guys know, I kind of complained about this like a lot on the podcast this year. I wasn't like a Johnny come lately to this either. I was like, the Ravens need a real running back. And I think like 29 out of 32 teams at any given moment in the NFL probably don't need a real running back.
And I also feel like through this, the analogy was sort of like, I especially agree with it more from the 49ers perspective of like, I think they actually do have to coddle their quarterback in a way, but like, the way you guys talk about Brock Purdy is like, this guy is not a top 32 quarterback, but then make the analogy of like, well, the Ravens are that same situation. I agree. All those things being equal.
It's actually a totally different situation because it's built around the quarterback's run. It's not at all analogous to Brock Purdy. I'm not comparing him to Brock Purdy because the offense is totally built around Lamar Jackson and his rushing, whereas the 49ers offense is built around everything but Brock Purdy. So I don't think it's like a similar situation in that regard at all.
You know, I mean, I agree with that. But like, as my analogy would follow, then you don't need to spend it running back. Denny said it briefly.
But if you're run-based offense, why would you not spend?
Don't be a run-based offense.
But they're always going to be, though, because of how special his legs are, is the point. Like, no matter what, this is going to be a run-based offense.
He is a good thrower, though. I mean, I think you can be a we run the ball well and often offense without staying below 0% pass rate over expected when you have a quarterback who has like led the NFL in touchdown rate in multiple seasons. Like, I get that some of what he does that is special is that his running enables his throwing, but he was an extremely efficient passer last year with Gus Edwards as his running back for most of the season. A few Keaton Mitchell, J.K. Dobbins games. His running is what enables his great passing on top of him having a really good arm. I don't think adding Derrick Henry would increase the passing productivity of the game, because it's hard to boost from where they were last year or where he was. MVP was 2019.
It's not about increasing the pass, but it's about making the running game that much more lethal and a strength that much stronger.
Like third in EPA on run plays last year, though. Like,
but what were they on run plays that weren't Lamar Jackson? It's just so.
Gus has also had like, I think he has like the most. Because
I mean, his EPA though is also skewed by the threat of Lamar. So, and that's another point. Like, if you can have this much success with like truly replacement level running backs, why would you not try to see what happens when you have an actually elite running back?
I think it's an interesting experiment potentially to put a legit running back who can make plays himself, which, you know, Justice Hill and Gus Edwards are not making plays themselves.
Where's your Gus now?
I think it is an interesting experiment. I wanted to push back a little bit on the idea that like the Ravens are refusing to pass it.
His mic. But then I heard you were disagreeing with Kyle, not me.
Right. So in the regular season, like Kyle mentioned, it was they were 0% pass rate over expected. In the postseason, they were 3% over their expected pass rate. And on first and 10, they were 10% over their expected pass rate. So they were doing like what we wanted them to do, and it didn't work.
Yeah, I mean, it was that Chiefs game. They passed a lot and it just didn't work. But like from an efficiency perspective, they were really good last year. And totally, Derrick Henry makes this team better. This is, to be clear, not me like saying Gus Edwards is anything more than just a guy. But the 49ers were by far and away the best rushing team in the NFL last year. Their rushing efficiency was as good as the 17th best passing team. If you become the best running team in the NFL, you should probably just pass more. Like, you are better passing than, like, you're better off passing in most scenarios. So you're investing, you get such diminishing returns investing at running back. I think Derrick Henry would be sick on this team and they'd be a better running team. But like, I think the problem.
When you're a better running team, though, it makes the passing better too. Just like by definition, I feel like.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. No, I think that's probably generally true. But I think your returns are so diminishing that like the gains you get by adding Derrick Henry over Gus Edwards move you from the third to maybe the second best running team, because they're really good running.
I will
team.
Just say, but I think this part can't be debated. If they had Derrick Henry or even Jonathan Taylor, so this started too with me tweeting a poll about Jonathan Taylor. Yeah. Would they have won the game if they had traded for Jonathan Taylor? The psychological impact, you're not going away from the run after three attempts. Everyone knows that. But at the very least, to me, it just spoke to how truly fragile it is to go money ball at running back. When you're a run-based team, that is. Like, did the Ravens kind of, like, expose their own lack of belief in the approach? When after, like, seriously, like, three carries, like, all right, we're not doing it. We can't do this.
But they're not a run-based team.
You really don't think the Baltimore Ravens are, it doesn't matter what like the play calling split is, the pass rate over expected is, the whole offense is fundamentally based on the special threat of Lamar Jackson's legs.
Naturally, but under Todd Monken, I would not describe them as a run based team.
They're like a neutral team. They're like perfectly neutral.
It doesn't even matter what the rate is. No matter what, it's fundamentally going to be a run-based team.
I mean, but
the special trait in the offense is the quarterback's legs.
How are we judging it, though? I mean, just because Lamar runs, like, you know, like drop
back. It's the thing that differentiates this offense from every other offense. To me, that's why it's like, I will never like not call it a run-based offense. Like, that's the killer app, the special trait of this offense.
They should invest. If they're going to go in at a position, they need to go in at receiver.
And 100%. Like,
I don't think they've tried this for half a decade and hasn't accomplished anything.
No, they used
two first round picks on receivers.
I mean, sign a proven guy.
They used three first round picks on receivers.
Don't draft Rashad Bateman.
Well, I was going to say
Marquise Brown, Rashad Bateman, and Zay Flowers. To be clear,
this is the argument that, like, when back to back number one overall picks fail, I guess you don't have to take a quarterback high to get a good one. You got Dak Prescott in the fourth round. Tom Brady came at pick 895 or whatever they got him at. Like, no, like, most teams should continue investing at wide receiver. They've totally come up with, like, Marquise Brown, probably just a guy, Rashad Bateman, maybe a 53-man roster level player, and Zay Flowers, I think, good number two. I don't know if I see him as number one. They've gotten a pretty mediocre run out on these investments, but, like, that's not an excuse to not invest. And think about the difference from, they were a really good running team last year. On the whole, it totally came up. I didn't say it came up bad in the final game. They just gave up on it. They were a really good running team. If they get Derrick Henry, they're a better running team. And I agree, they're probably a slightly better passing team. You're bringing, like, Derrick Henry, the threat of Derrick Henry probably gives you more advantageous boxes to throw against. But that gain is going to be very marginal compared to replacing Nelson Aguilar with a first-round pick wide receiver. Zay Flowers had a bunch of yards. He also had a very bad fumble. After that, they had no one who got over 40 yards, and their next best pass catchers were Justice Hill and Nelson Aguilar and then Odell Beckham. Like, that's the problem. That's the biggest problem. I also think having Gus Edwards is not an advantage of this team.
No, it's a disadvantage.
It's a problem, but it's a lower order problem because running in the NFL can only get you so far. They're an elite running team, but, like,
I do wonder about the broader philosophical argument where clearly running backs were overinvested in for decades in the NFL. But when you talk about diminishing returns, returns by definition become diminishing when all 32 teams are taking the same approach at one problem. And now the problem of running back, all 32 teams are not taking the approach of, it's like as replaceable as like a punter or a kicker, which I just think most people wouldn't agree with that. Or it's one of the most replaceable positions, but every position is going to still have irreplaceable 100 players. And just because it's one of the most replaceable positions doesn't mean all 32 teams can afford to treat it as truly interchangeable and replaceable. And I think we've probably hit the limits now of teams being able to just totally disregard the backfield.
There are definitely teams that can improve more or less with different running back play. Like, dude, the Chiefs can put a true nobody back there. It probably doesn't make a difference. And they get a really
good player. Chiefs should never spend another dime on running
back. Yeah, and they could get a really good player, and it probably also would impact them less in a positive way. And the 49ers are kind of the opposite, where their running back is such a feature of their team and helps them so much and is such a, like, designed part of the offense that I think their gains and their losses are exacerbated by the player in that role. But that's still, like, orders of magnitude down from, like, if they get the best running back in the NFL, the Ravens do, they have a really good team. If they get Justin Jefferson, Lamar's probably winning three more MVPs. Like, you have to shoot for those kinds of games.
Do you really think that's true after watching this passing attack for 5 years? I really don't.
Listen, no, if you...
I think we would know by now. Like,
No, if you look at Lamar...
No, what?
If Lamar was, like, truly going to be that kind of quarterback. Lamar is never going to put a team on his back and win via the passing. Lamar...
Well, this sounds like a strong argument to not have Lamar as your quarterback.
No. Lamar is special because of the entire package.
You got to trade him, then.
No, you don't. No, you do not.
Lamar is not
going to... He's got special traits that no one else has. So, but you have to, I think, accentuate and go all in on those traits. Rather than trying to make him something he's not, he shouldn't be a 35 to 40 attempt passer. He just shouldn't be. It needs to be about accentuating his special traits, which I don't think they're doing a good enough job accentuating his special traits.
I would like to see Lamar Jackson drop back 40 times, not throw the ball 40 times, drop back 40 times. Let's see what happens. Let's see if
he does. I feel crazy. Like Lamar is not a guy who can put a team on his back. I don't agree with, but I do think if you think that, Denny's going to trade him. Like, they should have traded him.
I do not agree with that. I think you can. I just don't think they're doing it in the most efficient fashion possible.
Which way? What don't you agree with?
They need to do everything they can to accentuate his special traits.
His
running is one of the most special traits in, like, the history of the league. Like, it's not even just special for a quarterback or special. It's like one of the most special traits in the history of the NFL.
Yeah.
I think they're squandering it if they're trying to have him throw 35, 40 times to friggin', you know, like Zay Flowers and Rashad Bateman. Like, go all in. Make a lethal rushing attack. Make a truly lethal rushing
attack. Yeah, I just don't think you can win in the NFL that way these days.
You, like, imagine you can't. The 49ers almost just did it. Like,
the whole issue, Pat, the reason you and I were successfully betting on the Chiefs in the Super Bowl was that when you coddle your quarterback and you face Patrick Mahomes, hand you your L, buddy. You cannot take it. And I think the coddling would be 100% different. But if you think that Lamar is so specific that he needs to rely on this run game.
Every quarterback is so specific is the thing. It's not even just a Lamar thing. Everyone has a unique set of traits that you need to go all in on and build around. And I just don't think they're doing it. The Chiefs are doing it. Mahomes is so special that you cannot do it with Mahomes and he can still win the Super Bowl. Yeah. But I just don't think they're doing enough to take advantage of his special traits.
Yeah, I just think the argument of, like, how do you take advantage of it sounds like how do you build a 1990s offense? And it would be
building a 1990s offense at this point might be an advantage. You're going to have to zag at some point. You have to zag at some point. No. You really do. Why do you think teams can't throw the ball anymore deep? Why, like, they put two safeties out there and it's like they've never, like, seen a defense. Like, the whole cycle is starting over again. It's never going to go back to the way it was, where it's like a run-based league, of course. But we're seeing, like, the cycle restart in real time. Where
teams are totally trending downward
by, like, one-two safety look.
But I will say passing efficiency still is, like, orders of magnitude. It's not, like, better than running. It is miles better than running. Like, you can't build – I mean, I don't think we can – you know, the 49ers have sort of ventured in that realm, and the Ravens
– I would say you can't do it is wrong. Two of the championship game participants were all in on the run, the Lions and the 49ers. So to say, like, you can't have success with it is, like, not correct.
Sure. Maybe can't is not – fair, but I think it's probably a suboptimal way to build.
It's not the most optimal, but just because it's not the most optimal doesn't mean it's suboptimal.
I'm saying there's one thing that's optimal, and then anything that isn't is suboptimal.
But all 32 teams can't have the optimal approach.
I would say any team that can't should try. Like, you should just be shooting for the next Josh Allen every 2 years. Like,
well, I was going to give Kyle a quick word on the Ravens.
And then we went on.
We spoke.
The good news is it's February 22nd, guys. We've got time.
We finally have gotten to the bottom of the Chiefs-Ravens game that took place 4 weeks ago.
Guys, we solved it. Everyone was wondering what happened for weeks, and they were like, when are Denny, Pat, and Kyle going to talk about it?
We did.
It's solved.
It was a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, I know we just had a heated debate 2 days ago about this very topic. We're going to give Kyle a brief word on it.
Guys, I know I set my hands on fire playing with this bonfire two days ago, but here's a bunch of gasoline and matches. Do it with you will, all right? And boy, did
we. Real quick, before we get to our first topic, I'm going to read our first promo. We will be right back after this. Spring training is here, so for those looking to get ahead of the upcoming MLB season, grab your Roto-World Baseball Draft Guide. It's loaded with comprehensive positional rankings, projections, and player profiles to ensure your draft is a success. Visit NBCSports.com/draftguide and use promo code BASEBALL24 to get 10% off at checkout.
Doors take us to summers away or winter adventures and afternoon getaways. Your dedicated Fidelity advisor can help you open those doors by working with you on a comprehensive plan to help you reach your wealth's full potential. Because doors were meant to be opened. Visit fidelity.com/wealth. Investment minimum supply. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. That's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
So Denny could barely speak because I had to resume my shout fest with someone else. But we are going back to Kyle because Kyle, he's our best ball guy. Well, Denny's a best ball guy. We're all kind of best ball guys at this point. But Kyle's got his ear to the ground of the best ball world. And to Denny and I, sure, people are already drafting Kyle. Like,
oh, buddy, are they?
Are there any early trends? And our producer, Adam, wanted to know about the rookie wide receiver trends because we don't know what teams they're going to be on. What is some stuff going on with the rookie wide receivers, the teamless rookie wide receivers in the early best ball drafts?
Well, yeah, that was the trend that there are a lot of things that are going to stick out. I think we'll see the quarterback landscape shake up a lot after last year, which was like, I'm going to say it was fluky in the sense of every freaking quarterback drafted from like the 8th round to the 12th round got hurt or benched, and all the early quarterbacks were successful. I think some of that's fluky. Some of that is us getting better at predicting the top quarterbacks. So we can talk about that another day. The one that just immediately jumps out is the ADPs of the rookie wide receivers. Marvin Harrison going as ADP 19, Malik Nabers at 35, Rome Odunze going at 56, Brian Thomas at 78, and then Troy Franklin, I think, is just outside the top 100. But like, think about where we were drafting Ja'Marr Chase and now where we are drafting Marvin Harrison, which is well inside the second round. Like, we have come a long way. I still think I'm mostly fine with these ADPs, but it is insane to think that Ja'Marr Chase and Marvin Harrison Jr. are in a very similar, they're in the same tier of prospects, which is they're the two best wide receiver prospects, probably since Calvin Johnson, I'd say.
Listen to Amari Cooper, at least.
Oh, Amari Cooper's a great one. Actually, he's a great floor example, somewhere around the floor of Marvin Harrison. Like, Amari Cooper never ascended to the greatest heights of wide receiverdom. He's been damn good for a long time. That's kind of a good floor comp for him.
People kind of forget how huge of a prospect
he was. Great. Oh, I totally forgot. He was so good. He checked every freaking box as a wide receiver. Yeah, it's kind of those three, I'd say. Actually, since Julio would maybe be the next.
Julio and AJ Green were really, like, they were both. AJ Green was a, quote, better prospect than Julio Jones. Didn't quite work out that way. It almost worked out that way. But,
I'm not complaining here. This is going to sound like a complaint. I'm not complaining. It's actually a compliment to the best ball folks. Okay. It's an efficient system. Like anybody who's drafting best ball teams in February is so into it, is so eyeball deep into it that they're not letting anything slip past them. Like Marvin Harrison going in the top 20. Yeah, that's efficient.
Marvin Harrison a top 20 pick? If we know for sure Kyler Murray is his quarterback.
What I mean is like it's become efficient. So maybe if you did a best ball draft 3-4 years ago, you would have had a guy like him. I mean, I remember rookies dropping into like the mid rounds.
Wasn't Ja'Marr Chase like a 4th-5th round pick? Right, and then we got the drops in training camp bit that dropped him like around. Oh man, how I long for the days.
So it's, if you're drafting against these people who are drafting best ball teams right now, you're not getting away with anything, right?
I mean, I've got some spots where I think we're still getting away with stuff, but you are getting away with way less nowadays than you were years ago. There's, you know, I look at the ADPs and there's still some stuff I like a lot, but we are so much closer to like properly valuing certain situations, like the rookie wide receivers.
Well, I would say though, it's kind of everything is like a balance where now like we're making sure. Like, we're not, like, overlooking potential value with rookies, but then it just leads to overlooking potential value with veterans.
Yeah, that's true.
No one wants to take the vet. I never draft a player over the age of, like, 24, just to be clear. But, like, I feel like lots of really winning fantasy players are always, like, super in on veterans. And because like,
I mean, Kyle and all you guys, we're into Lenny. We're into Lenny Fournette.
Right? Of course, we chose the one veteran.
I'm trying to think, was there a rookie receiver last year that everyone was all in on? And I go, same, like, this guy's not going to do anything. Remember his name by the name of JSN. He's the literal number 3 receiver on his own team. He's somehow going in the top 50.
I had intense FOMO about JSN because I was like, I can't draft him. But like everybody, all the smart people I know are drafting him.
I just genuinely did not ever understand that one. He was the number 3 receiver
on his own Quentin team. Johnston. I was very excited about Quentin Johnston.
I was never excited about him because of Mr. Froton, Eric Froton. I called Eric one day and asked him to give me the breakdown on the prospect class. And he's like, he disappears for games at a time. I'm like, oh, that sounds good.
Yeah.
It's funny. I was not in on Johnston as a prospect. And then he goes to the Chargers and we've got all this Chargers hype. And I was like, Let's not, you know, be so overconfident that I'm some sort of oracle of receiver talent. Let's draft the guy who the NFL thought was talented on a good team. You know what? I should have been the oracle on that one. I should have said, no, not taking Quentin Johnston. Because I agree with Roton that I didn't think he was in the mix as a first-round receiver. I knew the NFL would sort of see him that way. And I was right. And I still drafted him a bunch, and I was wrong.
So real quick on Quentin Johnston. So it's frustrating when everything goes right and then it still doesn't work. So I thought, okay, well he's redundant. He's a redundant pick for a team that has Mike Williams. So Mike Williams is going to have to miss time this year. So I'm going to draft Quentin Johnston with the idea that maybe Mike Williams missed time, and then Mike Williams goes down with a season ending injury. And I said, I'm in. It worked. It worked. Only it didn't work.
Okay, well, okay, Keenan Allen's taking up so many targets. What if he misses time later in the year? Then Quentin Johnston.
What if Alex Erickson misses time? Then maybe.
See, they had SoFi Stadium security guards running routes over Quentin Johnston.
They really did. They really did.
It was a huge bust. And, boy, yeah, he's get ready to speak Jim Harbaugh, buddy. Actually, he's probably a good fit for Harbaugh.
No, he's a great fit in that they're gonna run the ball a lot and not pass. And
they're gonna run the ball a lot, and then we're gonna pick our spots deep. And you better be open.
I don't know.
He's not gonna be open, and if he is, he's not gonna catch it. Like
I feel like we're gonna be writing a lot of Quentin Johnston healthy scratch for this year.
It's so true. Well, he probably. Oh, I just thought of something though, really bad actually. What is the one thing a coach loves more than life itself? It's when you have a blocking receiver. No, it's when you have a big game against them. And Quentin Johnston, didn't he go nuts against Michigan in the national semifinal 2 years ago?
He had a good game, I think. Yeah.
So like, Harbaugh is going to be remembered.
Coaches do love that.
This guy lit us up in the national semi.
Mm.
I mean, you literally see this in free agency all the time. Players who have a good game against a certain team are like, I think mathematically more likely than 1 out of 32 to sign with that team.
No, it's true. He lit us up in Houston or wherever the game was played.
That's pretty funny.
So we'll see what happens. Kyle, are there any other trends, or is it too early to really be identifying trends in best ball?
No, I mean, that one's the most interesting. I guess let me dovetail this, because I was talking about this to some other people in Discord. Chargers, what did they pick, number five?
Five, I believe.
Number five. Let's assume it's kind of a chalk run out, three quarterbacks, Marvin Harrison. What are you doing? Like, to me, it is so incredibly obvious that you take Malik Nabers there. I just think you have to write off Quentin Johnston. Say, like, if you get anything from him now on, great. Love it. He's a lottery ticket. Treat him like a fifth, sixth round pick. We'll talk about it later. They have one, if not two, receivers who could be cut. I think Mike Williams is more likely. And even if not, you've got aging veteran receivers. You need to backfill talent at this point, even if you had Quentin Johnston doing something, and you probably don't. It feels like a layup to take Malik Nabers. Maybe you could argue Brock Bowers there. On the other hand, that seemingly conflicts with their extremely run-heavy game plan that I think is looking more and more likely by the day.
Well, yeah, Jim Harbaugh, this man, I feel like it's his destiny to draft Brock Bowers. I just got scared thinking about that. But I don't know what they're going to – they'll take defense. They're going to take defense, I think. Maybe an offensive lineman. I think he's going all in on the trenches.
It's going to be weird, man. It's going to be weird seeing a Chargers team that goes all in, like you said, all in on the trenches, like maybe a dominant offensive and defensive lines. Like, what's going on? Like, it doesn't make sense at all. Like, L.A., like that stadium, like the Chargers uniform.
The political climate, the people there.
Pass it there now. It's going to be so... off-putting. I'm already tilted. My face is tilting off just thinking about Jim Harbaugh in L.A. It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. I believe, though, he is like a lifelong California resident, isn't he? Or is he from California? Are they from Indiana? I think I don't know where they're from. Doesn't matter.
I don't think they make good coaches in California. Like, they're all from, like, Youngstown, Ohio.
They are seriously all from where Kyle grew up. Uh-huh. We move on to Shanny system bounce for Alvin Kamara, Denny. New Orleans dot football's Nick Underhill believes New Saints OC Clint Kubiak will install a run game that provides Kamara with, quote, more space to operate. Are we 100% positive Kamara's on the team?
No.
No. We're not. Okay, Denny, take us through that. Are we 100% positive Kamara's even on the team? And then are we buying in to his fit in a Kyle Shanahan style system?
As many folks online told me, Kamara is a cut candidate. And So we could be talking about another lead back in New Orleans, whether it's a rookie or someone they pick up in free agency or whatever. But, you know, Nick Underhill kind of broke down what Clint Kubiak would bring to the New Orleans offense. And part of that is these outside zone runs, which Kamara has had success with in the past. It's just that the Saints have kind of refused to use them for reasons that Underhill could not understand. And I also can't understand. We've seen Kamara used as a battering ram, you know, an inside running battering ram, which just doesn't pass the smell test at all. So Christian McCaffrey in this Shanahan system on those outside run plays averaged 2.2 yards before contact per rush. That's outrageous. Okay. 2.2. Kamara last year averaged around one. And so if that's the spacing part, if you can get Kamara out in space, he can make something happen. Now, cut candidate, age 29 season. I don't want to get too ahead of ourselves. It could be good for him if he sticks around.
Yeah. Not to pile on, but pretty inefficient last year. It was his worst season by yards after contact, by rush yards over expected, by missed tackles forced, and they were using him poorly. Like, totally concede that. But and then his second worst season by a lot of metrics was the year before that, and his best seasons were his rookie and his third year. I think second year, I think he was a little banged up. It's like the trend line is very clearly pointing in one direction. I do think a better running scheme will help ease the downward trend that all like athletes face. That's just how like time and the human body work.
Well, and time for him, he's taken so many hits the past few years. They just have not been using him properly.
He's got so many soft injuries too.
They used up his like running back life force. Basically.
Yeah, he was still a really efficient pass catcher last year. Still crushed it in yards per route run and PFF receiving grade. And I think there's a strong argument to be made that just a lot of their inside running stuff should be handled by Kendre Miller. Like I think Jamal Williams under contract, but could maybe be cut.
I forgot about Kendre Miller.
Yeah, I know everyone, but you want to know who forgot about Kendre Miller? The New Orleans Saints, buddy. But he looked good in his final and really only game of the year. I think it was in week 18. Give him some of the more body blows type of stuff. Take Alvin Kamara back to that 120 carries and 80 catches Alvin Kamara from 2018. Because one, he's still a great pass catcher. He's still like one of the best at that. And two, just he's clearly taking a step back in terms of his between the tackle speed. Don't make him do as much of that anymore.
Since we are now a run-based podcast, we will stick in the backfield in Seattle, Denny, where the new head coach, Mike McDonald, said the team would emphasize the run in 20. So curious, you guys are all saying the Ravens need to pass more, and then the guy who's just coming out of Baltimore is like, we got to run. We got to run.
I mean, what do you expect, Pat? He's a defensive coach. Of course he wants to run. He doesn't have any interest in actually scoring points.
Yeah, Zach Charbonnet versus Kenneth Walker in 2024. It got weird in 2023. What do we think for 2024?
I mean, Walker, you know, per the metrics, had a better season. But I was actually surprised when I was doing research for that blurb that Charbonnet and Walker were kind of head-to-head in some pretty important ones, like the rate of 10-yard rushes, yards after contact per rush. Like, they were kind of in line with each other. I don't think that Charbonnet is going to overtake Walker like in training camp or anything, but it's worth noting that Charbonnet wasn't bad, even though he was kind of inefficient when Walker was out and he had his chance, didn't really make the most of it. I do think that the Seahawks just want to be, you know, that team. They want to go back to like their roots, like how they made it to the Super Bowl a couple times, which is running the ball and playing defense. And so you make this hire. I'm not surprised to hear that hire say we got to establish it.
I agree totally about what they want to do, which I don't understand why they didn't just keep the master of that around.
I know.
I'm gonna be still cautiously optimistic. The OC they made Ryan Grubb, the Washington, I believe, head coach, the Huskies, like Washington. College football.
I think
team
he was the offensive coordinator.
He was going to be their offensive coordinator after DeBoer left, and then he immediately left for a better job in the NFL.
Yeah. He had a high, well above average pass rate over expected. His teams threw deep. They had a really advantageous setup of somewhere in the NFL caliber quarterback and lots of NFL caliber receivers on that team. So I don't want to read too much into it. They also play on the West Coast and things get really weird with the passing out there. This guy plays in the Big Ten. He's got a 2% pass rate over expected. I'm sure of it. But the OC hire they made, I think, was a really strong pass game OC hire. How much of that gets to leak through when the head coach is mandating this, you know, run first, establish it type of mentality? I don't know, but I'm going to choose to remain a little optimistic. Also, in the quote from McDonald, he said, like, I know this is coach speak. Like, yeah, what is he going to say? Like, we want to be one of these frou-frou 10% pass rate over expected. Yeah. Of course he's not going to say that. No coach ever says that. Who said that kind of stuff? So I'm going to be cautiously optimistic about the passing attack still.
It is unfortunate that they can't say that, that they have to say,
I know.
We want to possess the ball. Okay.
They want to make people like me happy, apparently. I'm a run guy now.
No, yeah, I mean, yeah.
Hey, look, we needed one on the show. It was embarrassing when all three of us were like, well, the analytics say you got to do this. We needed a hard L on this show.
By the way, it says on Ryan Grubb's Wikipedia that on January 14th, 2024, Grubb announced on X, parentheses, formerly known as Twitter. This is actually on his Wikipedia, which I absolutely despise, that he would be leaving Washington after not being selected to become the new head coach. So, yeah, he was never hired to, like, remain offensive coordinator or whatever. He left after he wasn't head coach. Wouldn't be a podcast if we didn't, A, spend 20 minutes arguing about the Ravens for some reason, and B, talking about Kyle Pitts for some reason, Denny. Where the Falcons tight ends coach, Kevin Kroger, said the team views Pitts as an asset in the running game.
Yeah.
He pointed out that that might not be true. And what does this mean for his 2024?
Yeah, season? I mean, this comes a week after a new offensive coordinator in Atlanta, Zach Robinson, said that he sees Pitts as a versatile piece in the offense who, you know, can be used in a number of ways. And then the tight ends coach comes out and says he's an asset, not in the running, in run blocking. He like specifically said run blocking. And so, you know, I looked into it, not strongly, just cursory.
You didn't have to look into it strongly because the results were obvious.
And the only, so out of 110 qualifying tight ends on the Pro Football Focus grades, blocking grades for tight ends, Pitts was 109th. The only guy worse, can you guess?
Taysom Hill.
Oh, that's a good guess.
Hurst.
Okay.
He was the only. He was the only guy worse. And you know, and a bunch of Falcons fans chimed in and were like, "I hope Pitts does well, but man, like he has no interest in blocking."
Oh, he's a turnstile.
I will say, 2 years ago and three seasons ago now, his rookie in his second season, he was just your run of the mill, below average run blocker.
Like, why would you have Kyle Pitts block? Like,
well, I mean, you keep him out there because the moment, if you're like only subbing him off for run plays, the moment Kyle Pitts is not on the field, you're like, you've very clearly tipped your hand. He was like 53rd and 61st in run blocking grade, which is to say, like, not good. Like, no, doesn't deserve any credit for being a run blocker, but maybe not the worst in the NFL. And that also goes along with the dude having a bum knee for an entire year. And not only did his run blocking stats fall off a cliff, obviously his receiving stats did as well. So I think he might not be so bad as a blocker that you can't play him on play action. But like,
he's like the kind of guy, how could he be a good blocker? He's like 6'8". Can this guy really be a good blocker?
Like, he's like tall and thin. Like, yeah, what? Like, come on. That's not happening.
It's not happening. What's also not happening is us not taking a short break. We'll be right back after this. This Saturday, the Premier League is back on NBC and streaming on Peacock. Watch Manchester City continue their hunt for a fourth straight Premier League title when they take on Bournemouth. Coverage begins at 12:30 p.m. Eastern.
Doors take us to summers away or winter adventures and afternoon getaways. Your dedicated Fidelity advisor can help you open those doors by working with you on a comprehensive plan to help you reach your wealth's full potential. Because doors were meant to be opened. Visit fidelity.com/wealth. Investment minimums apply. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well.
So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Denny, who's the best player in Manchester City?
Well, there's Johnson, I think. There's Smith. You can't forget about Smith.
Is England? You can always guess a Smith. Erling Haaland was there in the promo. He's a great Nordic man.
Wait, how do you spell his last name?
Haaland.
Ooh, glad you didn't ask me, because I would have said, don't they have a Holland? Which would have been correct, just not phonetically.
I believe he does Haaland. Yeah, Adam's pointing out Kevin De Bruyne might be their best overall player. Erling Haaland is their most explosive scorer. He's one of the most explosive scorers in the history of the Premier League.
Why was soccer all over my TV this morning?
I don't know. Or why were you watching
something
it?
About Messi? Messi playing somewhere?
They were like, they've been on like a global tour, and he didn't play a few places, and it upset a few people. And he's just enjoying retirement, even though he's not playing. He's enjoying retirement with Miami FC or whatever.
Oh, so it's like when a member of the media retires and starts a podcast.
Yeah, kind of.
Oh, yeah. That's a good comp.
It very much is.
This is his podcast.
I believe he didn't play in Hong Kong, and they were very, very upset. Because the only reason to ever go see the Miami MLS team play is, of course, if Messi is playing for it.
Wait. The Miami MLS team travels worldwide?
You travel worldwide when you have Lionel Messi is the deal.
Okay.
St. Louis City FC just won their first game in the North American Champions League, Denny, but you didn't know that.
No, I didn't. I can be honest about that.
I even follow MLS. What in God's name is the North American Champions League?
I forget what the actual official name of it. We have like a Champions League, though.
That's not the...
We got absolutely wrecked by one of the best Mexican teams last year, America, I believe they're called. They came into St. Louis, and folks, we were not ready for what America had to offer.
Oh, wait, is this just the Liga MX teams get to play MLS teams, and I assume some of the South American or the Brazilian teams.
I don't think it really goes into South America.
Okay, all right. But I remember looking at the bracket, and I was thinking, a lot of MLS teams getting knocked out early.
Yeah, we weren't ready for what America had to bring to the great state of Missouri. We'll be better
prepared. So are you saying America right now?
I am. They're called, it's one of the most famous Mexican soccer teams is called America.
But you don't pronounce it that way.
It's like America, kind of.
Okay. I was very confused.
It's not how I normally pronounce America.
I've never heard it. So
the Confederation of States that I'm from is America. They don't pronounce it the same way in Mexico, Denny. Moving on to cut candidates from Kyle's recent article, where he's regaled us with tales of those who may be cleared for salary cap space ahead of free agency, which begins disconcertingly soon.
I got a few of your St. Louis players on this cut list thing, apparently.
March 11th is when the legal tampering period begins. Kyle, who is a cut candidate? Who's the first cut candidate you want to buy for an article? Really good read over at NBCSports.com.
Yeah, I think from a fantasy perspective, one of the most interesting ones this offseason will be Joe Mixon, who has already gotten in a Twitter dust up with fans or writers about people speculating on if he's being cut. I actually think it's probably more likely than not that he stays, but they have a really interesting, in that it's mostly wide open, backfield. If he is not on this roster come week one, it would either be roll the dice with Chase Brown, who wasn't highly drafted but was really explosive for a limited sample as a rookie, or more likely than not, they have to go back to the well and draft a running back. I don't think they would cut Mixon just to sign a running back who probably makes something similar to Mixon. They probably want a rookie contract running back. And I mean, if you put a young, explosive running back in a Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, probably at least one more year of T. Higgins offense, like that guy, as long as he's taken in the like first 100 picks of the draft, could be the dynasty RB1 for rookie drafts, because it's a very weak class. If the fifth best running back gets to play for the Bengals, I might make him the first best running back.
Denny, do we think that the Bengals will be forced to renegotiate Joe Mixon's contract for the third time?
For the third time? I would be actually shocked. I mean, we were reading the tea leaves this time last year, and it seemed like a 100% certainty Mixon was not going to be on the team. You had their front office people talking in past tense when it came to it. Well, he served us well and this and that. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, so, So I will. It's not impossible because apparently they can't quit Mixon.
It's like Kirk Cousins. Once he's on the roster, he never leaves.
I will say though that in the piece I wrote, which folks can find on the site on how teams handle too high coverages, and the Bengals primarily just check down over and over and over again, like we talked about on Tuesday's pod. That has something to do with a lack of explosiveness in the backfield. And when I talked to ESPN's Ben Baby about that situation, he said, until something changes with the running back situation, this is going to continue into 2024 and beyond. Mixon is not a threat. Like, teams do not perceive him as a threat. Chase Brown, way more of a threat, in my humble opinion, than Mixon. I'm hoping that the Bengals just hand it all to Chase Brown. I think he's an exciting player, very productive in college, and unbelievably fast last year with the ball. I think that he like broke records in next gen stats. So let's do this. You know, let's get Chase Brown going. Let's force teams to stop playing too high on 80% of their passing plays and change things around for the Bengals.
Denny, it sounds like you think running backs matter.
Yeah. I will say Denny is advocating to give the guy that they spent peanuts on all of the carries, to be clear.
But he was saying Ben Baby's telling him, well, we stink in the backfield until we get a real running back. We're screwed.
I mean, somebody who threatens the defense, and Joe Mixon, who is paid handsomely for running back, is not doing that.
So would you say that Denny, Gus Edwards, and Justice Hill threaten the defense? Sorry, I'm not sure.
Oh my God. We can't. We're legally barred from talking about the Ravens until September.
Yeah, actually, I fully agree on Chase Brown, by the way. I feel like he lived up to his pre-draft
bill,
basically. And they need to give him a longer look. But man, how many guys have risen and fallen in this backfield behind Joe Mixon? Like, it's insane. Like, we had half a century of Travion Williams discourse, and nothing ever happened.
Who's the other running back, the Michigan running back, who's also just a backup who never did anything for them, like literally last year, like 2 years ago?
I forget. There were two Travions, I know. There's no way to find out, though, which running back for the Bengals. 2022 Cincinnati Bengals Pro Football Reference. I'm not
typing. Chris Evans? Was it Chris Evans?
Yes, Chris Evans. That's correct. Joe Mixon has made a career out of outlasting people in this backfield.
Yeah, yeah, he's probably going to do it again too. Like,
number's $8.5 million. They're going to have to renegotiate him, but
yeah, I mean, I think last offseason he just like functionally took a bit of a pay cut, and it wouldn't surprise me again because they can save just shy of $6 million by cutting him. Mm-hmm. And given their current situation of Jamar Chase needs a contract, T. Higgins is probably getting the franchise tag. They'd love to give him a long term contract. There are priorities on this team well ahead of let's keep Joe Mixon around. But I think for Joe Mixon, like, you get to play on the Bengals. Like, you get to go to the playoffs every year, assuming Joe Burrow stays healthy. You get to go to the playoffs every year. Like, this is a successful offense that will put you up to succeed in the best of your ability. You don't want to go sign like a 2-year deal with the Titans right now.
Well, I feel like even if the Bengals value him less than they did last year, they still might value him more than any other team in the league. So he might.
I could see that for sure.
He will be cut if his contract is not adjusted. So he's definitely a cut candidate in that regard. The way you guys laid it out, I sort of feel like he will be cut, actually. With T and the Jamar situations, I don't really know how you can – it's almost untenable, even if he renegotiates, to keep Joe Mixon. But, Kyle, who's another cut candidate from your article?
Yeah, this one is – I don't want to say it's not for the money purposes, but at least the money doesn't work out as cleanly as with Joe Mixon.
It's personal.
It's personal. I did have a few guys where I'm like, this guy's going to save money, but, like, they just need to split. Like, I had Terrace Marshall in there. I'm like, find Terrace Marshall and go home. Just let the two separate. This one is Michael Gallup. They don't save really any money by cutting him unless they designate it as a post-June 1st cut, in which they save just shy of $10 million. But I mean, Gallup has a top 24 hit for a cap hit for a wide receiver in 2024. Oof. He was 68th in yards per route run. They platooned him with Jalen Tolbert, who, if you remember, Jalen Tolbert was like last year, as in like now almost 2 years ago, was like the offseason hype. And then the moment he stepped on the field in training camp, this guy's not an NFL caliber player. Yeah. They platooned that guy with Michael Gallup over the second half of the year. They're almost splitting the wide receiver routes perfectly evenly. So I think it's more of it's time to move on from this guy who, just because of sort of bad injury luck, it seems, at least because it was a torn ACL like
It was an ACL, and it was 2021, yes. And it's a reminder that they usually go seamlessly these days, but there are still times where they do not go seamlessly.
Yeah, he was never the same.
Never the same. And also just a reminder, too, there are different degrees, like different degrees of athletes where, like, some guys can afford to lose 5 to 10% of their explosiveness. Michael Gallup probably was always, we should have known, was not that kind of athlete and could not afford to lose any more explosiveness. And yeah, the only thing, Jerry loves his guys so much.
I know. It's, but yeah.
They got to cut him.
Yeah, I mean, they held on to Zeke for like 2 more years than they should have because they loved him. And it was like, you could tell they were heartbroken to move on from Zeke. So I think, I know. So I do think ultimately Gallup, you can talk about Mixon, where I think he's more interesting to talk about, but I don't actually know if he's the most likely cut candidate for the team. Michael Gallup does seem like a fairly likely cut candidate because they're platooning him with Jalen Tolbert. Like, it's clear he doesn't have much of a role for this team, even though you have to designate it as a post-June 1st cut to get much of the, like, financial ramifications of it. Feels like something they almost have to do. MVS kind of
fits. Hold on. I was going to say, next guy you say should be cut. Curiously, they've never lost a Super Bowl since. You think he should be cut?
MVS is like another guy who, like, I think he has a role on this. He has a role on this team. It's just, what is the dollar value of that role? And it's like Michael Gallup. I think he could be a team's wide receiver 4, but he's being paid like a wide receiver 2. MVS is like a deep cut wide receiver 5 on a team. And he's being paid more.
He's not the wide receiver 5 in real life. They still used him to like clear out space.
No, I'm saying that's his talent level is a wide receiver 5.
Okay.
And because he's on the roster being paid as much as he is, they use him as their wide receiver 2. They absolutely do. But like, he just runs wind sprints. You can pay someone $7.50 an hour to do that. He has come up big in he actually had a great Super Bowl redemption arc in this playoff run. But he's a player who just has contributed so little to the team that could use an upgrade at receiver or receiver 2 if you want to crown Rice the wide receiver 1 so desperately. And this is such a good draft to be taking a late first round receiver. It's the deepest draft at receiver in years. So to me, the cap ramifications make a ton of sense. They can save like $12 million by cutting him. And it's an easy time to backfill his role.
The only fear I feel like with MVS is that it's a renegotiation where they keep him around for some reason.
That
would not be good for fantasy.
They seem to like him. I mean,
Justin Watson too. And he falls in that same bucket of like, what do you do here? You clear out space.
I don't know, man.
You're a good locker room guy.
And well, the problem is all they say now is when we say this, count the rings.
Right. Exactly. So, they have had success with doing this, so it's hard to argue against them. But please, add Troy Franklin in the MVS role. Add Brian Thomas in the MVS role.
The Chiefs, I think, potentially could draw the wrong lessons from winning 2 straight Super Bowls, which is that, like, the way you went to win 2 straight Super Bowls is you have Justin Watson and MBS running routes and not drawing any targets. That's not it. Like, they got away with it despite having the worst wide receiver room in the NFL. Okay. And they weren't quite getting away with it per EPA, per success rate. Okay.
Once the games matter.
They need to draw the right lessons, which is to completely revamp this offense, except for Healthy and Pacheco, and that's it.
I don't think they'll revamp because, like you said, I don't want to say they're going to draw the wrong lessons. I think paying a ton of money for a wide receiver, the Chiefs don't necessarily have to do. But as it turns out, there's a cheat code in which every the last weekend of April, they let you take wide receivers for like $2 million over 4 years. Do that. A lot of that, in fact.
Yes.
I think if they approached wide receiver like the Packers have, whereas they both actually traded away their superstar wide receiver 1 at the same time, but the Packers backfilled with like modest quality.
The Chiefs tried to. In their defense, they did Sky Moore, and then they did.
I agree, but I think they should keep this up and probably go a little harder. And that the Packers were also drafting a bunch of receivers on day 3. They were taking like 4th round picks, 7th round picks, like priority UDFAs. I think their approach of like, we don't need a 1st round receiver, but let's go 2nd round, 3rd round, 5th round. That is like the ideal approach for the Chiefs, because I think that's a smart way to moneyball wide receiver. Keep churning through cheap but high upside options.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you don't even have to extend them at the end of their contract. I think that would be a fair takeaway from the success of the past two Chiefs Super Bowls. My fear is that their takeaway is you have to spend nothing. You get to spend
absolutely nothing. I doubt that that'll be the takeaway.
I hope not. By the way, Darnell Mooney to Kansas City. That's going to happen.
Yeah, it's like,
man.
Why are you guys cringing?
Why not?
What's wrong with that?
You can't be the only one that thinks a team full of Darius Slaytons and Darnell Mooneys could wreck this league.
Oh, wait a second. Right. Darnell Mooney is Jerry freaking Rice compared to what they have now.
Is he? Darnell Mooney, he of 414 yards last year. He of.
He was so good.
Stop. I don't want to hear anything about some like boomer counting stats, okay?
He was so good.
Darnell Mooney would be an upgrade over MVS. I think he could do some of the clear out stuff.
I was told Mahomes could make anybody work. So let's see it with Darnell Mooney.
He did make them work. Like, again, like. I want more upside, more excitement, but like actually Darnell Mooney, if he's cheap, would honestly be a good
and player. Darius Slayton, who I've both kept both of them on my dynasty team
for I'm totally down for Darius Slayton too.
Slayton needs to happen. Slayton is like a top 15 receiver in this offense.
Yeah, unfortunately, Slayton is, I believe, under contract for this upcoming season. The good news is his team hates him and tries to cut him every year.
I never understood a team relationship less than I do the Giants.
Like, every single training camp, I'm like 100% he's going to get traded for a fifth round pick and they'll have to give up a conditional seventh. And they just keep him every time, even though he like. They very clearly don't think he's one of their best receivers. He also proves them wrong like 2 to 3 years in a row. He would also be like a great fit of like money ball, clear out guy, except probably better than MVS.
He did commit a season ending drop against the Vikings 2 years ago. We digress.
Forgive and forget.
Forgive and forget. You think they're going to cut Darren Waller though and not Darius Slayton? Curious. What's up with that, Kyle?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they cut Darren Waller because it would be so soon to cut bait on a player they spent a lot on. But I do think among the more obvious from an outside perspective, not, you know, sunk costing it as much, Waller makes a ton of sense. He's going to turn 32 at the start of the season. He's appeared in 28 games over the past. Cannot stay healthy. 28 games over the past three seasons. 552 yards in his first year with the Giants. Actually, another team that I think would greatly benefit from we need to backfill not receiver one, but receiver 1 through 5 is the Giants. So if they don't end up going wide receiver early, I'd love to see them take multiple shots on wide receiver on day 2 and on day 3, because they have some solid role players and maybe they don't like need the true number one. But if you don't have that, you need to run 4 or 5 deep. And right now they run like 1.5 deep, maybe.
Darren Waller might be more of like a renegotiation candidate. He has no guaranteed salary left, but I mean, there's no chance in hell this guy is getting $10.5 million this year. Like, no chance. No.
You said he has no guaranteed money left?
He has no guaranteed money on his 2024 salary. He might have like a bonus or something, but of his $10.5 million salary, none is guaranteed.
Yeah, I mean, if that's the case, that also puts the Giants in a really good leverage spot, like you said, where like you can earn it back in incentives is probably what they would tell him.
To end the show, Kyle, why do you think Mike Williams is more likely cut candidate than Keenan Allen? Because they're both cut candidates for the Chargers.
Every player on the Chargers roster is a cut candidate.
And Kyle, like, real quick too, like what's the deal with he's injured? What's the deal with like injury guarantees and being hurt and all that, if you know off the top of your head? But get into that situation with the Chargers and why you think they might cut Mike Williams instead of Keenan Allen.
Yeah, to my knowledge, he does not have injury guarantees. I mean, for a lot of players, it's exactly like it sounds. If you're not healthy at a certain date, some of your contract guarantees. It's why we saw players like Jimmy Garoppolo and Russell Wilson benched, even though like they could have kept playing there, but in their backups, it was so that they couldn't get hurt and then claim a bunch of their money as guarantees in later years. And then there's like injury protection money, which is, I think, somewhere around $2 million if you get to claim the full amount of it, which in terms of the many hundreds of millions in cap space, probably not the biggest deal, especially for a Chargers team that whether or not like there's an extra like 1.7 to 2 million in like injury protection that ticks in for his contract, they need to clear 40 some odd million. And they have a bunch of good but aging players. I mean, both of their pass rushers, they have linebackers, like linemen. that will be options. I think Mike Williams is probably the most likely, and especially versus Keenan Allen, because the cap savings between the two are not that different, but the talent level simply is drastically different between the two. Mike Williams is a good outside player who I think he's more than just like the MVS clear out guy. He's a good jump ball winner, but they can save around about $20 million by cutting him. Oof. Over the past four seasons, he's topped 900 yards just one time, and he's already, I believe, going to turn 28 or has turned 28. So to me, they're going to be cutting someone. Maybe they can trade people as well. Like, I'm sure there will be trade talks about Khalil Mack and maybe even Joey Bosa. But that's like a starting point of we can work to trade guys. We have to cut some guys. Some guys will need restructured. I think Keenan Allen, just based on his talent level alone, should be the priority among almost all of their cut candidates, free agents, trade candidates to keep. And that probably means Mike Williams has to be moved on from.
Well, I wasn't sure how we'd get to 60 minutes today. It wasn't the goal. And
folks, we got him.
All we had to do was pour gasoline on an already simmering debate that we cannot stop having. And getting my talking points ready for next Tuesday.
Yes.
Pat, so I texted you at the I listened to the Tuesday show, at which I heard about the debate. And unrelated, you mentioned Kenny Pickett. You're like, oh, he's got, as many touchdowns as interceptions. Oh, my God, he's got under a 2% touchdown rate. Holy crap, he turns 26 this year. And then 10 minutes later in the show, you go, he turns 26 in June.
Yeah, I know.
It'd
be a little better if it was December.
Exactly, that's what you said. So I lied. The reason I got thinking about this is I lied about Mike Williams' age. He will turn 30 early in the season.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like he's been 28 forever.
Yeah. He'll turn 30 early in the season. He's got one 900-yard year in the past 4 years. Injuries, not the most efficient receiver. It's not like when he plays at a high level, he's a top-5 receiver. And this team has so much money to clear.
Listen, yeah, if you're going to be 26, at least turn 26 in December. That's all I can say about Kenny Pickett. Yeah, really good stuff. Thank you so much. Check out Denny's articles. Denny's had a lot of good stuff on the site. Kyle's had a lot of amazing stuff on the site. I've got my season's review still up. Got to get to work on my free agency content.
What are you doing for?
Probably need to text DJ about that. Denny, are we it's on air? Are we going to tag team this primer again? Didn't we do that last year?
Are we? Are we ever? Yeah.
Free agency primer will be live sometimes next week. We're going to have a lot of free agency content. We're going to have a lot of combine content next week and this week for Mr. Zach Kruger. Check that out too. Eric Froton's going to be getting in on the game. He's going to the combine. So for Denny, for Kyle, and Pat, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for enduring our Ravens argument. And we'll be back next week.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.